welcome to the Eye on the U podcast, the Miami Herald's Miami Hurricanes podcast. I'm David Wilson, and I'm joined, as always, on the other line by Susan Miller-Degnan, our Hurricanes beat writer at the Herald, who has escaped Miami for the time being, up in Portland, not looking for Mario this time. Maybe some people, some of the testier Canes fans might be sending him back. But Susan, how's it going? You're up in Portland for a couple of days on the bye week, got away from this hurricane. Got away from the Hurricanes as well. What's going on?
Got away from the Hurricanes. I thought it would be a really good week to take off. And that was obviously before Miami lost. Cause I mean, I did think it was going to be an easy win. And then I thought it would be an easy week, which it is for me, maybe not for you. And you know, that everybody would be happy and, you know, Mario would be, what would he be? 3-1? That's what I thought. But it did not end up that way. So yeah, the question should be, how are you?
You know, it's a weird week to write about Miami. Obviously the bye week, they pretty much always kind of like take the week off from media available. Like even if they had won, we probably weren't going to be out of practice at all this week. I'm sure they actually probably have had a couple of days off because of the hurricane. I think school has been closed, right? So weird to have it after, you know, usually it's after a game like Middle Tennessee and we're like, oh, let's write a nice story about Keyshawn Smith because he had another kick return touchdown, or Thad Franklin because he had a couple touchdowns. But no, it's been like kind of the never-ending post-mortem, which a loss like that kind of deserves because it's legitimately one of the worst losses in Miami history. Kind of getting blown out by Middle Tennessee. I know they only lost by 2 touchdowns, but we're down by 3 scores for most of that game. They went in as a 25 and a half ish point favorite, depending on where you look. It was a butt kicking right from the beginning, which is, I think, the way that Rick Stockstill, the Middle Tennessee coach, basically put it. Shocking. I mean, it obviously Miami has had bad losses like this recently. Obviously FIU is in a lot of ways was kind of the last straw for Manny Diaz. It ended Manny Diaz honeymoon that was left. And we were already pretty, I think there were already people kind of fret, cause that was a very rocky debut year for him. And they lose to Louisiana Tech later in that year, but Middle Tennessee, considering it's at home, considering, that team was not particularly good last year. Considering all the big expectations that Mario Cristobal came with and asserted, and just the place where this program is, I mean, it is right there with FIU as probably in the modern Hurricanes era, probably the two worst losses, right?
Oh, yeah, that's really bad. And, you know, especially I think the Mario naysayers or people that were, or maybe they're fans of different teams, you know, but the people that weren't so sure and they were kind of staying quiet because definite Mario honeymoon. Maybe our first question should be, is the honeymoon over already?
Yeah. I mean, I think for a lot of people it has to be, right? I mean, it doesn't mean that it's going to be a failure, and our gimmick this week is going to be a panic meter for whole bunch of different Miami topics. But I mean, yeah, like I remember we talked, I think we talked about it on this show that you contributed to a thing about the new coach, a national story about what kind of the expectations are for new coaches, what would be an acceptable season for all these new coaches across the country. And I think that's like 8 wins was going to be like, it was going to be hard to be 8-9.
I know.
It was going
9.
Yeah, 9 wins is going to be like too hard to get really frustrated with. By the way, my power keeps surging, so hopefully I don't.
But David, what we said was that 8. I think I had written that 8 would not be acceptable.
Right.
But that 9 to me would be acceptable. At least it would, and I would think to most people it would be.
Definitely. Of course, now I think that is like it, no matter what happens now, the season is kind of unacceptable. I mean, I guess if they win the Coastal, like win 9 games somehow and win the Coastal, you know, run the table except for a loss to Clemson and then lose to Clemson again in the ACC championship, like maybe that would be like kind of all forgiven. But we're We're cruising past the honeymoon.
Yeah, very quickly. Yeah, I mean, I just didn't think it would happen this fast.
Yeah, it stopped.
I really didn't. And you're right. We usually don't get coaches, or we usually don't have too much availability. We used to a couple of years ago, but in the off week, but. You know, to me, a sure sign was that Mario usually goes on WQAM because I'm sure they have a contract, some kind of contract with QAM. And he usually would go on like on Monday morning, but nothing, no Mario. So yes. It's been just totally silent. And I guess with the storm, you know, made it worse. But I'm wondering what is going on there this week.
Yeah.
It
has to be one of those weeks that's like you start from ground zero again and rebuild a lot of things. You know, there's got to be, you know, some sort of quarterback competition going on. Obviously, the offense got a lot of attention, but the defense was just as bad, maybe even worse, honestly, than the offense was. They've got like questions to answer it. It feels like basically every position now, and that includes a spot like quarterback that we felt like was the most settled position they had on the roster at the start of the year. Anyway, let's get into our panic meters. The starting point, we've kind of talked a little bit about it already, but where is your panic on a scale? We'll do 1 to 10 on all these. Where's your panic meter on the state of this season?
Right now?
Yeah.
I would say it's an 8.
Yeah, I think 8. I mean, I could go as high as 9, but it's dire. I mean, and the reason it's not a 10 is because before this week, we were like, we had the word, our podcast last week probably aged worse than any podcast we've ever done because we came on here and talked about, we talked a little bit about the wide receiver.
It was true.
But we talked about how a lot of stuff looked good against Texas A&M, particularly in the trenches. And, you know, those issues we knew they had were an issue again on Saturday. The wide receivers were rough. The offense was, particularly the passing game, was like non-existent, essentially. Tyler Van Dyke continued his struggles. But the really alarming part of what happened on Saturday is this Miami offense had been running for 5+ yards per carry. And against Texas A&M, Middle Tennessee, they run for about 1.5. And that is like astonishing. Like it's inexplicable almost considering what we saw. And you know, if that's an outlier, then sure, Miami could be okay because I thought they were gonna be able to run on everyone they played for the rest of the season. I mean, it's hard to have confidence in that given what we just
How could that be an outlier at home?
I know.
I don't know. You return home. I don't care what anybody says about not there weren't any fans there or whatever. I don't believe the stadium. Yes, I do believe fans make a difference, but no, a team doesn't do what they did last game just because there are not a lot of fans and they're home. I can't buy that. What about you? So I mean, here's the thing. It's hard to say. I mean, I'm saying an 8 panic meter only because we haven't seen like the Mario Cristobal era. Like this would be the first example. What happens afterwards? Well, we already saw what happened after they lost, but played a pretty darn good game.
Right.
Okay. So now I don't know, man. It's hard for me to fathom that you wouldn't be panicked at this point.
Yeah. I mean, it's an inexcusable loss, obviously. And it's a loss that's it's like hard to explain because so much of what we saw the team do well and through three games, and one of those teams against a really good team, Texas A&M just beat Arkansas on Saturday. So I don't want to hear people bashing that team. That is they're clearly not the fifth best team in the country like we thought they were at the start of the year, but that's still a really good team. It's going to be in the top 25 probably all year. It looked pretty, you know, we saw a lot of good stuff and that stuff just all disappeared against a Middle Tennessee team that, I mean, common logic would dictate that should be an overmatched team against a team like Miami. Like, there's some stuff that I think is explainable, right? They run an air raid. You're going to pass efficiently. Everyone, you know, you're going to break some long plays, you know, slants that go long or curls that, you know, you miss one tackle and stuff happens. But the fact that Middle Tennessee just put an extra guy in the box and Miami could not figure out anything to do offensively against that is like the blueprint is out now for how to beat Miami. It sure seems like.
Yeah. Well, that might segue to our next paddock meter.
Yeah, because obviously the reason that works is because teams don't fear Miami's passing game right now, which is also inexplicable. And it's been a longer running issue for Miami this year. And that is Tyler Van Dyke's massive, massive regression. Where is your panic meter at on him right now?
Seven?
Yeah. We're right in line here too. I'm probably a little on the low seven part of it more than you.
I know how good.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. The
guy's great. I mean, guy's great.
And even all the arguments you could make for like why last year was, I don't want to say like a fluke, but maybe like he looked better than he actually is. Like there's a couple arguments you can make, right? One is maybe he is a product of having two record-setting wide receivers. Another is maybe he's just a product of Rhett Lashley, who is, you know, now obviously a head coach, one of the best offensive coordinators in the country last year. Another is he beat up on some bad ACC defenses. Well, you talk about those wide receivers, neither Mike Harley or Charleston Rambo are in the NFL right now. It's like, they're really good, but it's not like he was like just chucking prayers up to Jerry Jeudy and Jalen Waddle and, Jackson Smith and Jigba, like all these great wide receivers who could prop up any quarterback.
The thing is he was on target.
Right.
The other
part is if you want to say he was just beating up on bad defenses, like is Middle Tennessee supposed to be better than like Pitt's defense last year? Like
yeah, definitely. He did great against Pitt and he had some really good games and he looked so smooth and comfortable last year and supposedly has a better line, more experienced line this year. So I the panic meter is fairly high for me about him, not because I don't think he's really good, because I saw it last year. I saw it all year, almost all year, but because this is a different coaching staff. And I'm personally wondering, and now he has a separate quarterback's coach.
Yeah.
He has a new quarterback's coach, just, I would think, helping him also with some mechanics, you're saying, with the game plan and stuff. But I like what? And it's a different offense. I mean, Gattis's offense is totally different. All of it together, I'm wondering what he's doing different mechanically. Did they want him to change stuff even a little? Did they put anything in his head, kind of mentally in his head a little bit? Not that he's bad, but just change this little thing.
Right.
And you'll really see, you know, how good it is after you do that. I'm trying to figure out what is a little different. And now it's just totally screwed him up mentally, every way, physically.
Yeah, I mean, it's another one that, like, there's a lot of explanations. Like, I mean, he's not playing well, right? Like, it's not all on the game plan and the play calling, right? He's not playing well. But a coach's responsibility is obviously to get the most out of their players. Mm-hmm. And last year, whatever Rhett Lashley was doing, and a lot of it was obviously play calling, but maybe also his coaching, as you pointed out, he was the quarterback's coach too. You know, whatever he was doing, even if you're saying he was making Tyler Van Dyke look better than he did, he made Tyler Van Dyke look like one of the best quarterbacks in the country for the last 6 weeks of last season. And we know that is in there. It's not all theoretical, right? We saw it. We saw that happen. We saw him throw for 300 plus yards and 3+ touchdowns in 6 straight games. And the last year was the first Power 5 quarterback to do that since Joe Burrow won the gosh dang Heisman. So we know that's in there. It's not like we're just propping him up based on his recruiting rankings and some draft hype. Like, the draft hype didn't come because he was this five-star quarterback who's got perfect size and the best throw you've ever seen. The draft hype came because we saw him torch everyone they put in front of him for the second half of last season. And, you know, so a lot of it obviously is on him. He's not accurate right now. I don't know, maybe he's not going through his progressions well or whatever. He's not taking deep shots like we know he likes to with the frequency he did last year. So, I mean, a lot of it is on him, but at the same time, like, we know he's a good player because we saw him be a good college football player. You can say maybe he never was as good an NFL prospect as people said. That's not what we're talking about right now. We're talking about him being a good college football player. Right now, he's not a good college football player, and last year we saw him be a great college football player. And that's the reason I think both of us have the panic meter not super high, because the production right now and the fact he got benched deserves like an 8-9 on the panic meter. But we know he can be really good. They obviously have a bye week. They've got to get it figured out. They need him to get things figured out.
Right.
I think they need to. They've got to clearly make this offense more amenable to him.
Yeah, I think this panic meter thing is, which I said before, is really dependent also on how they do the next game.
Yeah,
we haven't seen it again in the Mario Cristobal era. We have to see what happens. Then it'll be next week. It'll be a little more realistic for us to figure it out.
Yeah. On a similar note, where's your panic meter at on Josh Gattis and his offense right now? Because that they caught a lot of the brunt of the blame, I think, in the immediate aftermath. I think both of us are probably guilty of it too. Obviously, we're going to talk about the defense after. So, but the offense is the starting point, because it was the one thing that I think we knew coming into this year should be pretty good. They were, I think, a top 25 offense in most of the important categories last year.
Right. I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with Tyler. Okay. So a lot of it's tied to Tyler. I understand that we're talking about Josh Gattis, but I mean, I would say maybe 6.5.
Yeah. I'd go 7, and I'm probably on the higher end again. Like, it doesn't look good. And what's concerning is, again, it's what we talked about at the top, is that they couldn't even run the ball against Middle Tennessee. And like,
no,
I don't know. Like, if you're not gonna throw the ball, like, you could have made a case, and yeah, you could have made a case through 3 weeks that Josh Gattis was doing a good job, because Miami's run offense was really bad last year. They were a really good offense despite rushing for fewer than 4 yards per carry. You can make a case like, all right, you're gonna sacrifice some of the big passing numbers, and in exchange we're going to be this great run game ball control offense, that with an improved defense we're going to win a lot of games. But they didn't throw the ball well on Saturday, and they didn't run the ball well, and they were awful.
Yeah, and they did run again the first couple games, right? So I was thinking, okay, all right, let's give this a shot. But if Tyler, the passing game is going to be as bad as it is. I want to see another week. They're going to be back home against a very important game.
Yeah. An awful, terrible defense. Maybe the worst defense in Power 5 football of like a somewhat competitive team, North Carolina, what was the score of that Notre Dame game? They gave up 40 points in the fourth quarter to App State in week one. What did they give up to Notre Dame? They gave up 45 to Notre Dame, which had been scoring like 12 points a game. Like, that is a terrible defense. If you cannot, and the Miami, I guess, did still put up 31 on Saturday, although one of those touchdowns came on a kick return. I don't know. I just think this offense does a lot of things that frustrate me when I watch an offense, namely they're terrible in the red zone, which was kind of the death knell for the 1 year Dan Enos experiment. Like, a lot of their yards per play stuff was okay, but they were terrible in situational football, and
that is kind of what, I mean, we obviously it was the story coming out of the App State game, but it happened again in the Middle Tennessee game. They got stuffed on three straight plays from at the 1 yard line when they could have cut the game to a single touchdown going into the fourth quarter. And then the game flips right there. They get stuffed on fourth and goal. And then on the very next play, Middle Tennessee throws a 98 yard touchdown and the game's kind of over there.
Red zone again. I mean, really? And then, unbelievable. You're right. There's nothing else to say.
Yeah.
They made such a big deal of it last game.
Yeah.
The game before, I mean.
Yeah. I mean, my frustration, I'm always a pro, like, spread guy. So I was, maybe I had my biases or whatever. But I just think it's way more valuable to be a really good passing team than a really good running team. Now, the argument you could have made was that running, if you can block, basically. But we saw that's not even the case for this team because Middle Tennessee just crushed them inside. I know Josh Gattis obviously won the Broyles Award last year as the best offense, as the best assistant coach in the country. But, this isn't Michigan. It's a different school. You got a different, at Michigan, he won by having, they had a really good running game. They kind of won in spite of quarterback play. It's really hard to compete at the highest level without a really good quarterback, or at least really good quarterback play. And right now this team is getting bad quarterback play. And that was, coming into the year, we thought one of the strengths of this team.
100%, as they say.
Okay. Switching gears to the defense, which again, kind of felt like they got let off the hook for a couple of days because all the talking points were the quarterback battle, Tyler versus Jake Garcia, Josh Gattis versus Rhett Lashley, all that kind of stuff. But the defense, it kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it. It was like one of the worst in terms of giving up big plays. The North Carolina game obviously sticks out from a couple years ago when Michael Carter and Javonte Williams just kind of took turns running for 50 yard touchdowns. It felt like,
right.
This is again, Middle Tennessee.
Yeah. I mean,
69, 71 and 98 yard touchdown passes.
And also gave up an
89 yard catch.
And where's the times the on this panic meter, panic meter,
defensive coordinator.
It's not as bad.
I weirdly agree with you. I'll say a six. I'm gonna go a six.
I'm not as bad. I would say five.
Okay.
Five. But wait, is the panic meter on Kevin Steele or is it on the defense?
I think it's on defense. I think it's on the long-term outlook of what Miami's defense will look like being led by Kevin Steele.
Then I'm going to 4.5.
Okay. You have confidence that he can get this turn.
I do.
So what is your case? Because I feel like we might be on the same page here, but I'm curious 85. What your case is.
I think he's very good. I think that they were forced to play some kids. Was Jaden Harris?
Yes.
A freshman corner who was out there one play.
Played some special teams, but one snap on defense and he gives up a 69 yard touchdown. Tough spot for a true freshman to be in.
He's
not one of the biggest recruits in the class in terms of ranking. And then also like kind of making a position, he was a cornerback in high school and, they're playing him as star, whatever they're going to call it. So is really a cornerback
it's
spot.
A hybrid.
It's a hybrid because Tecori Couch is there too.
Right. It's a DB / whatever linebacker. But I think Kevin Steele is going to do the best he can now with what he has. And hopefully Tyreek Stevenson is not badly hurt, but I saw him limping.
Yeah.
On the side. I definitely saw him. I mean, really limping gingerly. He could, one of his feet, it was
Yeah.
He was limping. Okay. After that play, and he was in plain clothes, which really makes me nervous. He's their best corner. They need him. And I'm not sure. Unless it's been reported, I haven't seen, if he's badly hurt or if he's out for a while. That's not good. That's definitely not good. Okay. So Corey's okay. Right. But I'm not pushing the panic meter down anymore. That's it.
The reason I'm less worried about the defense long-term than I am about the offense, because the defense was bad last year. Like, that was a pretty impressive turnaround that they had put together through 3 weeks.
Right.
Now, acknowledging the Texas A&M's offense is probably really bad, but still, it was a pretty good turnaround they had through 3 weeks. And then, the three of the four touchdowns they give up are basically on one, as you said, Jaden Harris just gets burnt on a one-on-one. On another, DJ Ivy gets burnt on a one-on-one. On another, Takori Couch kind of gets burnt on a one-on-one. Looked like maybe a little bit of a miscommunication. He and Tyreek Stevenson were trying to figure out something pre-snap. And then the other one was a missed tackle by Corey Flagg on a curl that ends up being an 89-yard gain. Those are the same things we were talking about last year, right? So the defense is not better than it was a year ago, but I also don't think it's like fallen off a cliff in a way that the offense clearly has kind of fallen off a cliff. Get some better players in there. And again, you can make a case with Josh Gattis if he gets his guys in here, guys who are better suited to run a power rushing game, pro style offense, which is obviously kind of what Mario Cristobal wants. So it's going to be better on defense, though. I think we have not seen the same regression that we have on offense. We haven't seen the improvement, but it's pretty ugly right now, but it's a lot of the same ugly issues we talked about last year. You would hope that it would be cleaned up, but it's obviously not. But at the same time, like, I see what they're doing on offense, on defense in a way. I see what the idea is on defense better than I see what the idea is on offense. On offense, it seems like they don't have like a clear identity at all.
No. And I think actually, I think they're panicked on offense.
Yeah. I mean, you can see.
I mean, the players.
Obviously, a lot of drops from the receivers. It's interesting that the Tyler's not even taking the deep shot. I don't want to make this all about the offense of Tyler Van Dyke, but it's interesting. He's not even taking deep shots necessarily, which is like when you get down and panicked, like you try to make hero ball play. Like we saw it when he came in last year. We were kind of joking when he first showed up that all he's going to do is chuck it deep. And like now he doesn't even try to do that.
Yeah, that's all. A lot of it's confidence too. Yeah.
So they got to figure all that out this week. Defense, I think, is going to be harder to fix this year, but I think just the better, more and more talent they get in the room, talent wins out on defense, I think, more than it does on offense. All right, last one. Where's your panic meter on the Mario Cristobal era rebuild, whatever you want to call this?
Okay. I'll give it a 6.5.
Oh, that's a lot higher than I was. I'm still giving him. Six. I'm still giving him. Five. I'm saying four. It's different.
You know what? It's not Mario. I don't think it's Mario per se. It's the same old stuff. It's the players. Can he?
That's kind of why I'm low on the panic, relatively low.
Yeah, I think that's too high. I think that's too high. Okay, but I'm not going to go lower than five now.
That's fair.
Because
it's hard to after the middle. I mean, if after the FIU game, where would most Miami fans' panic meter have been on Manny Diaz? It would have been in the five plus, certainly, probably even higher. Obviously, it was later into his tenure, but still.
Right.
I think this team is more talented than it was when Manny Diaz took over, probably also. Now, the reason I'm at a four is he's got a long way to go, right? I mean, you said it's the same old Miami. You don't fix the same old. Like, you don't teach a new old dog new tricks, right? Like, take some time to, I think, get some of the stink out of the program. We know he recruits well. I think the recruiting class will mostly stay intact. I have not gotten the sense that like anyone is imminently like given up on the Mario Cristobal vision. I think this will probably hurt with adding more to this class, which is currently, I think, number 10 in 24/7's rankings. Like, for example, they missed out on Kyler Williams, a four-star wide receiver from Lakeland, 6'3", basketball player, like guy they really could have used.
And who was at the game, right?
Right. I mean, I don't have a source on this, but he was at Miami on the first game of the season, came back for this game right before he made his commitment on Tuesday, spent 3 days in Miami, visited campus on Friday, went to the game on Saturday, and then went to the Dolphins game on Sunday, and then picks Georgia. I don't know for sure, but I get the feeling he probably would have picked Miami if things had gone a little bit differently for the
right. If it was between the Dolphins and the Falcons, he would have picked the Dolphins. So
Dolphins and the Bills, you mean?
I'm sorry. No. I'm not talking about the game.
Oh, yeah, yes. Okay.
You said it was Georgia, right? So I'm doing Georgia and Miami, whatever. It's not Mario. I think Mario has all the right ideas, and I mean, as far as the style of offense, I'm not sold on that, honestly. But as far as Mario's philosophies and the work and the hard work and everything he says, I mean, I think he's definitely on the right path. But I'm kind of shocked. I know it's early, but I don't know.
His whole identity that he came in was basically like, we're not going to be the same old Miami. We're going to be the new Miami. But we're not going to be the same old Miami. We're not sitting, you know, get rid of the turnover chain. We're not celebrating these little accomplishments anymore. We're not taking anything for granted. We're working hard every day. And then, I mean, he has a letdown in one of the worst letdowns in Miami history is what they did on Saturday. And it runs so counter to his philosophy, his identity he's trying to instill in the program. I know we're only in the fourth game, but it's just such a stark flip from what was promised.
Exactly.
And, you know, I still think this is ultimately going to work. And I'm not willing to say it's not going to work based on one game against Middle Tennessee in his first season, but we jumped from like 1 to 4 or 5 in your case, or 6, 7, 8 in probably some other fans' minds, kind of overnight.
Here's the thing: it's one game, and I understand about the knee jerk reaction, and that's what always happens with people when a team
loses. And Miami fans notoriously probably not patient enough.
Totally.
Reactionary, too reactionary, all that kind of stuff. I mean, most college football fans are. Obviously, we deal with more with Miami fans, but continue.
Totally. The thing is, if they would have, it didn't matter. If they lost, it would have been horrible. But this was just really a really bad one. My brother called me today. He was out of the country. From California, saying, I don't know, and it's like, I didn't want to hear it. Just asking me how could they have had those huge passing plays over the Miami defense, you know? So it's just the way they did it.
Yeah.
They didn't, I don't know.
They punched Miami in the mouth and then kept punching.
Middle Tennessee State.
Yeah. 3-0 all time against.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah. 90 years.
They own Miami.
They do, unfortunately.
Going back to the one point I forgot to make on the defense. Yes, I know there were a lot of issues, but also, like, I don't know, they kind of their game plan kind of stunk, it seemed like, defensively. Like, they talk all about press coverage, right? And that you definitely need that against an air raid team where the whole idea is quick passes. You watch all three of those touchdowns, they're playing way off the wide receiver, the defensive backs. No contact with the line of scrimmage, nothing. So they got beat at a game that's not even the one that they say they want to play. So that's the problem with this game to me. It's not just that they lost. It's that everything they said they were going to do well, they didn't do well. And then all those things they hadn't been doing well and that I was less certain about, they also didn't do well. So I kind of wrote that in my follow, like, they're not doing anything well. They have no identity. And
we have no idea because we have no access. We have like no idea what's going on in UM land. Yeah. So yep.
Yep. All right. We're just about out of time. So thanks as always for listening. You can follow Susan on Twitter at S Miller Degnan. She's off this week though. So not a whole lot of Canes content, but be sure to read her coverage from Saturday from
and Howard Schnellenberger.
Oh yeah. Right. You wrote a big Howard Schnellenberger story for our Dolphins.
In relation.
Anniversary of the 1972 undefeated season. So check that out. I'm about halfway through that. I gotta finish it after we finish. I started reading right before we decided to record. You can follow me on Twitter at DBWilson2. I've been handling a lot of Kane stuff this week. So if you want all the postmortems for this awful Miami loss, you can check out MiamiHerald.com. Thanks as always for listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week.